Welcome, y'all!
Hey!
Yo! That's right. This is the Pre-Game Engineer Tailgate Mirror Racing Podcast, episode number 120. It's Thursday, November 9th, 2017. I'm Tailgate Mirror Rusty Wallace. I'm joined the PTM Podcast Studio Pre-Game Engineer Andrew Sherman. What's up, dude?
Hey, man. I just got off a plane a few hours ago from Austin, Texas.
Austin?
I'm more excited to be doing this podcast than I even was to be home. I haven't even been to my house yet.
He brought his luggage all the way to the PTM Podcast Studio. We're fixing to get it started. We're ready to go. But before we do, let's let y'all know the PTM Podcast is sponsored by you. That's right. Go to patreon.com/PTM and join that Watch a Drinking Club for as little as $1 a month. Get your free koozie and some stickers. The best part is every cent in 2017, which is closing out right now, we're donating to sponsored drivers. So join the PTM Posse today. Be a part of the sport you love. This week's show is brought to you by our official sponsors at the $5 and up per month level. That's Catherine Kingston, Ashley Stang, Harry Balzano, Mark Wiley, Craig Smolders, Mick Rose, Robert Kepingler, Tony Salt, Colby McClam, Eric Kepner, Ryan Keeper, Marion Levesque, Patrick Cleary, Eric Bearden, Jeff Brown, Chad Sterling, and Stephen Linden. Let's do this. Woo!
We've got our guest calling right back into us after
it sounded like we just ran out of breath there. It sounded like it took three or four breaths maybe if you get through that.
Three or four breaths. It's getting crazy that trying to do that every week.
People are talking smack over here on the YouTube.
Oh, man. Getting after us already.
Giving me hell about my hair because I usually have a hat on.
Oh, yeah.
They said this is a comb over, so I showed them the top with it. There's no eyeballs here, people.
Well, he's got not just the nice hair, but he's got the button-up shirt, long sleeve. He's dressing up for the PTM Posse today. But with that said, we've got a returning guest tonight, Sherwin. I don't know why he decided to come back on.
I don't either.
Yeah, because this is the worst racing podcast.
introduced in front of maybe 200 people as the worst
at Eldora Speedway.
At least you guys are on time tonight. Jeez.
Yeah, right.
Well, I didn't run out of gas this time, so it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, right. He had plenty of beer, just the gas part was, you know, a little.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, I straight off
well,
that's,
the important part, right?
That's right.
Right. I'm gassed up.
Well, y'all know him. He needs no intro. He is the Orange Cone. Thank you, Mr. Cone, for coming back on and joining us and having some fun tonight. We've already gotten sideways in the pre-show, so we might as well keep going until
let's just be really glad the pre-show is not recorded.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there was a pre-pre-show.
Oh, yeah, the pre-pre-show was not recorded, yeah. And that was off the wall.
That is totally off the record.
Oh, Mr. Cone, you know how we start off this thing. What you drinking on tonight?
Boys, you are not going to believe this. I am sipping on a caramel macchiato.
Well, Mr. Matt,
you
Weaver.
Got a late night of riding or what? Or driving?
Caramel drizzle.
Caramel drizzle.
Drizzle with the drizzle.
I don't know. That sounds great.
sounds a little sexy.
It is. It is.
Oh man, I don't know why. But
I think he's got that black cone I took a picture of in Tel Aviv coming over tonight, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. We always make, I think because Weaver is the one who always has like this six name drink when he comes on. So anytime
here's a good one. Wait, here's a good one. Starbucks double shot, Ristretto sub. Oh, what is a sub? Oh my God. Whoever this is the most vile drink I've ever
seen. Vile in name or flavor?
What color is it?
Starbucks double shot on ice, Ristretto. Well, six pumps Ristretto. That's a lot of Ristretto for anybody who doesn't know. It's disgusting.
Is it alcoholic?
Sub-soy. That's what it is. Yeah, sub-soy. It's really horrible.
Ooh, yeah. I don't even know where to go.
Sounds like diabetes in a jar.
That's probably... Yeah, that's probably deep.
It tastes like an entire loaf of bread that has been turned into burnt toast.
Oh my goodness! Oh,
I'll take a double. Why not?
It's a venti double shot. That's what it is. It actually is a double. Yeah, it's gross.
20 ounces of coffee, way too much. It's a huddle of coffee.
Trente.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Cone, it was great to see you at Eldora in person. Finally, get
yeah,
to meet.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Hang out with the lap traffic fellas in the. In the ghetto ride that they brought.
That was
a ton of fun. That really was. Those guys did it right, and it was really great to see you guys there. I really appreciate you guys coming up. We need to get you guys up into the Midwest a little more often. There's a lot of that is definitely one of the cornerstone events of our summer racing season up here, but There's a lot of other really cool stuff going on up here. So anytime you guys are up here in the Midwest, definitely let me know, and we'll try to find a racetrack to go hang out at, because we've got a lot of real cool joints to go hang out.
Well, us Southern boys down here, you know, we put on this big facade that we're all strong and everything, but, I mean, it was like 49 degrees when I went to work this morning, and I had on a jacket and gloves. So we're going to have to wait till maybe May, June.
I definitely said, what the hell today? In Austin, it was 45 degrees this morning. What the hell?
Bunch of wimps.
I saw some woman hobbling across a parking lot today. She's wearing this old lady sweater. I'm like, listen, lady, it's not that cold.
Oh, well, I'd probably push her over and steal her sweater in whatever weather it is. So, what
can I say? Much to push this lady.
Well, you know, the funny thing about meeting people, especially via this avenue, the way we have through this podcast and being race fans and whatnot, is that it makes places that weren't as high on the list to go to move up the list. Like, you know, Michigan International Speedway wasn't super high on the list. It's always on the list because every track's on the bucket list.
Yeah.
But I'd say it's probably jumped up a notch or two just because of how easy it is to get to Detroit and having friends in the Motor City and friends like you, Cone, who we know we're going to be there. We know we're going to have a crowd. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. That plays a big part in it. And it's a big part of, I think, what NASCAR needs right now, too, is being able to go somewhere and see all your buddies there.
One of the things that I really have been impressed at Michigan, and I'm not just going to single them out because I know this happens everywhere, but one of the things that I've had an opportunity to do the past couple of years, and I know that people have watched me do this on Periscope, is I will go through the infield and just drive around, like after practice and qualifying's over on Saturday, or the truck or the Xfinity race is over, and just go and see and talk to people. And it's amazing to me how many people are there just having a good time that maybe know who I am and what I'm up to and want to be a part of that. But there are I've met some really great people. The Michigan infield people put on just one of the most incredible weekend long parties every June at Michigan. They've got a huge cornhole tournament where they get, you know, they've had members of the Detroit Lions come out and do this. They've had the track president be there in years past. They've had drivers fresh off the racetrack come and participate in this deal. It has been a ton of fun, and I know that this goes on at every racetrack throughout the course of the season, but that's really the great part about social media, is it does give you the opportunity to meet these people that you wouldn't have met in the first place, and then it gives you the chance to put the face with the name, as we did at Eldora. And as you know, I've had the opportunity to meet hundreds of really cool people that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to meet if not for just a chance Twitter account that somehow managed to get a little traction and give me a little notoriety. And it's really fun. It really is.
Well, so speaking of the Twitter handle, the Orange Cone, how are you feeling?
The Orange
Cone. Orange Cone. How are you feeling about being removed from the pit road entry?
Not good. Not good. Here's the thing. as much as I really enjoyed every time the cone would get just destroyed by an out of control car, I mean, I realized that it probably was not going to last forever. I wish that it would. Because it did, it for me certainly added a level of entertainment whenever it did happen. I think it's really interesting to see how many people have blown pit entry, because it's really hard to see that stupid square. You can't see it, NASCAR. Put the cone back there. It really helps. It really does. Damn it helps.
How do we do a petition? There's like online petitions and stuff, right? That you can put cone back.
Is there something like Twitter where we can holler at NASCAR?
Yeah, tweet at OD Steve. Yeah, let him know. We want the cone.
I don't think he reads tweets anymore, to be honest with you. And I don't blame him.
Yeah, yeah. That poor fella.
Yeah, he gets. I will give all of those NASCAR guys a ton of credit, and I know how hard it is. Believe it or not, I've done it. I've sent him some really crappy, you know, hey, what the hell are you guys thinking? I will give those guys a ton of credit, that they usually do face the music very well. Steve O'Donnell, Jim Cassidy, Brent Dewar, all of these guys are very active on Twitter. particularly during the races. OD Steve, when there's a pit road penalty, he'll show you the computer screen. He'll be like, we're not making this up. Here it is. Says right here. This is where they got dinged. You know, I think that's great. They're very responsive. I don't follow a lot of other sports. In the ones that I do, I certainly don't follow as in-depth as I do motorsports. But I really have a hard time believing that NFL officials are in-game responding to fans. I mean, not just officials, but executives responding to fans on social media the way that NASCAR and in other motorsports sanctioning bodies do. I think that's really cool.
That's something that NASCAR has absolutely above every other sport and commands a lot of respect and gives a lot of, you know, I mean, we can give them crap and all that, but it gives a lot of legitimacy, too, to what they're doing to be so transparent like that. Sure.
I totally agree. I mean, I think the NFL may have even kind of looked at that and they took it one step further on their side of the fence with having the NFL consultants on the penalties, like the referees that aren't referees anymore. Fox has theirs. NFL Network has theirs. Mm-hmm. Guys that we recognize that are tweeting and commenting during games about it. But I mean, I think it's cool. I think I don't envy Odd Steve at all because he's certainly been the brunt of many a very poignant text or tweet. I would say from me. Now, I don't have his phone number, but I mean, I would say the same for Jill Gregory. I mean, mm-hmm. when we're talking about the marketing side of things, I've been pretty critical of her at times. And, you know, they all have pretty thick skin, and they're all willing to engage.
Yep. Well, it's episode number 120. It's time to talk about car number 20.
Driver 20.
Driver number 20. I mean, there's the obvious ones, right? I mean, we've talked about Tony before.
Well,
our
fandom lifetime, right?
There's yeah, two, yeah.
Rick Newsom's the most obvious, right?
Absolutely. duh.
Okay.
Just because I always throw the stats out for the wins. Tony, 33 wins over 356 races, 1 out of 10 in there. And Kenseth, 14 wins, 176 races. Joey had the 2 wins in 144 races in 20. And Marvin Panch, 6 races, 1 win.
Oh, Marvin.
In the
he
number
keeps
20.
Showing up. Like, he keeps recycling about every 15 numbers.
but our spotlight driver this week, Clyde Lynn, has the third most number of starts, 160 starts, no wins, but he was a truck dealer and salvage yard owner. He raced out of Christiansburg, Virginia. His first race was in 1965 in the Greenville 200. He finished 10th on that half-mile dirt track. He was known, I love these guys. I don't know why I like this, I mean, but he drove around with a cigar in his mouth.
Why not?
Just because. Things like that, and Dick Trickle lighting up cigarettes as he's going along. Now, he said he didn't smoke it in the car, but, I mean, nobody believed him. He's like, I'm just keeping it moist.
Oh,
like,
he didn't inhale? Or didn't right, even like
right, or whatever. Yeah, whatever it is. He raced Junior Johnson's banana car. He racked up 2 top fives.
Oh, the
fives.
Banana.
Yeah, back in 67 after Junior Johnson gave him that car. Well, he probably bought it, and it was probably money exchange somewhere.
What was that? That was a twisted up Impala ride? It was... He did all kinds of weird stuff to that
yeah,
car.
He did. He retired from racing, had a mobile home moving business. I don't even know what that is if you think about those words in a row. Mobile home moving business. Y'all try to figure out that.
Big old tractor trucks, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah.
Wide around trailers, baby. That's what that is.
Yeah. He passed away in 1996 at age 60. So, Sherwin, you ain't got your hat
that's
on. You just
bit
came
early
back from
working. To go out.
It was, yeah, yeah. And his wife passed away at age 54, so... You know what? Hats off to them. Hats off to Mr. Clyde Lynn and driver number 20. So there it is. With that, it is time to tear
that's
it.
That's your history lesson for the day.
Yeah, there's your history lesson for the day. It's now time to tear it down.
Ruh-roh.
We went to Texas.
I went to Texas for real.
You went to real Texas.
But like after the race was over, unfortunately. I should have gone out early.
Yeah, I guess we start at the end, huh? Harvick. Shows what you'd expect. What he show you? It shows the medal you'd expect to see from a Cup Championship contender. Cone, what do you think?
Wait, what are we talking about?
Harvick.
I wasn't paying attention. Sorry, guys. No, it's really funny because they call him the closer. I don't really necessarily think of Kevin Harvick as the best closer in the business. He's just one of the best in the business, period. And you know, when you are in a position that he was in, to pull off a win this, you know, at this stage of the season. He'd only had one win prior to this past weekend, and to come out and to take that win from Martin Truex, who has been so dominant on the mile and a halfs, I think it really bodes well for Harvick's chances heading into Homestead. You know, when you look at the two racetracks, they don't have a lot of visual similarities, but I do believe turns 3 and 4 in Texas are very similar to the turns at Homestead Miami Speedway. I think Harvick picked a really good racetrack to knock it out of the park at, because he's going to be pretty good at Homestead here in a couple of weeks.
Well, you know, the story for me is what you just said, is that passing Truex and taking it from Truex, who was the given. Oh, we're going to a mile and a half? Oh, well, it's Truex's place. We'll see who wins at Phoenix or what happens at Phoenix for the last two spots or whatever. But for Harvick to just muscle it up there, and the driving that he was doing, I mean, of course, on the TV they're dramatizing it and everything, but hell, he made some good moves, and it was really cool to see him talk about that low line and how he really had to, both of them really had to kiss that low line. Truex just sort of got screwy, but Harvick just in the end just had the faster car too. So it was,
and I think what he did is he was coming so fast, mm-hmm. that he actually pressured Martin maybe into overdriving it a little bit. I think that's where that little bobble came from. And you don't see that a lot out of Martin Truex. And of course you're thinking, well, Truex is already basically locked in to Homestead on the playoff point situation or on the stage point. I'm so confused on this. I don't even really know. But I think all we know
been
is
doing
that
it all
Truex
season.
Is basically a lock to go in to Homestead. So why is it such a big deal that he didn't win? Well, the big deal here is it's not that you want to win because you want to lock yourself in, but that win may have knocked Harvick out if he prevented Harvick from winning. And that's what really, to me, the really fascinating part about this playoff format is, if you are already locked into the next round or the final round, you still want to win all those races, because that may keep somebody from who can beat you in that final mm-hmm. round, that may keep them out. And that's what I think a lot of people tend to overlook in this format. And it's just such an intriguing level. It's like, yeah, if I could keep anybody out of that final round at Homestead, it would be Kevin Harvick, because you just don't know when he and Rodney Childers, when they get it right, man, those guys are so hard to beat.
Well, hell yeah. I mean, that was the Tony Stewart model.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is why I think what happened to Brad at Martinsville is so crucial. If Brad won at Martinsville, he'd have been locked in, right?
Yep.
Well, he didn't win, and now it's likely. I'm going to say it's 50-50, because Brad can always pull a rabbit out of the hat. But it's 50-50 that he's not going to race his way in at Phoenix. How big is that? Okay, yep. There is a guy that could win the race at Homestead, because he's done it in the past. He could win that race, but not be able to win the championship because he got knocked out at Martinsville. He's done everything else right, but that one race. That's, to me, is the beauty of this format.
Yeah.
All right, I'm done talking.
Beauty is an interesting word. On the whole, I don't disagree. I mean, I think the reason why we have something to talk about is because we have this format that is allowing for us to have something to talk about. I mean, clearly we'd have something to talk about anyway. If we had started this podcast in 2001, we'd have something to talk about.
Yeah, we'd talk about something.
But nobody there are listened. Some interesting things. there's more die on the table, et cetera, because we have eliminations, because we have these situations where we know some cars are strong at some kinds of places and some aren't. And we have drivers like Brad saying Martinsville's a must win, and it looks like he's pretty close to getting in, and then he doesn't.
Yeah.
So now, can he win at Phoenix? Well, it's not a good track for him, so we'll see how it goes.
Right. He potentially could point his way in. I mean, we'll talk about it in a bit, but then that's also counting on four other guys who are strong contenders on not winning. And, you know, you're almost going me versus the field. that's tough. That's a tough bet.
Me versus the field is always a tough bet.
Yeah, it is. So, those are the big. Any other big takeaways for you, Cone, from Texas?
You know, the other takeaway, and it's just the way the 78 team performs. And I know that they, quote, gave it away within the final, you know, 20 laps of the race. But to see those guys come out and perform at such a high level week in and week out, that is so refreshing to me. And I realize they've got the technical alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing and in their, quote, the fifth JGR car. But, you know, in reality, they are all the way out in Denver. And the challenges that that presents. And, you know, you've got Martin Truex Jr., who has kind of bounced around the past, you know, through a couple of rides, DEI and MWR. And, you know, I know that he took this ride at Furniture Row, you know, maybe because it was the only semi-competitive ride that was open at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he and Cole Pearn have just absolutely clicked. They're probably one of my top two favorite combinations in the garage. And the other we already talked about, and that's Rodney Childers and Kevin Harvick. I love those guys together, and I think that they've done so much over such a short period of time. Cole Pearn and Martin Truex Jr. are exactly the same way. They have just clicked so perfectly. And I don't know that, you know, say Hendrick Motorsports gets this grand idea that they're going to hire Cole Pearn away and give him a ton of money to come in and crew chief someone. And I'm just going to throw a name out there like a Chase Elliott. You know, I don't know that they're going to replicate that success because these two just seem to click so perfectly. And I love the fact that it's with a relatively independent team out in Denver, Colorado. And, you know, that's my big takeaway is just the way that that team has continued to perform week in and week out. And I'm not, you will hear people say this all the time. I'm not a journalist. I'm allowed to have favorites. I would really like to see Truex pick this championship up. I'm a big fan. I've been a big fan of his for a long, long time. He's a great guy. I know the situation going on with he and Sherry, you know, with her health issues, and I think it would be a wonderful story. And to have a team based outside of that Charlotte area, to me, would be a great championship story. I would love to see those guys pick up that championship.
Well, how about a big hell yeah and a cheers?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah. I think you've got a lot
of anybody over here going to disagree or put you down for that point of view.
A lot of friends in that in that circle for sure.
And a big shout out to Maggie Dub too out there.
Yeah.
Maggie Dub. That's right, Maggie Dub.
So Cone,
or as I call her, Leggy Maggie.
Leggy Maggie.
Moving on.
We're gonna have to make her listen now. I don't know if she's paying attention or not.
That one. All right,
she's
all
gonna
right,
have
right,
to
right.
now.
Never mind.
That's right. No, it's all good. Cone, tonight for you, I wore my favorite hat.
Let me see the hat. Hold on.
Okay. All right. This is
show the camera. I can't see it.
Oh yeah, there he comes. It's coming to you. Right. I became a fan of Bubba Wallace back in the truck days, and then he's starting. He wins Eldora. He's gets the ride for Nationwide, and then now into Cup. And for some reason, it's weird because I've just been following him this whole time, and it's really cool. And to see him get this ride and everything, it's
you
like
keep saying I.
I, we, whoever. I mean, we've both been following along. Point is that he gets this ride in Cup, and I think collectively the folks who've been following along are like, all right, this is a great next step. This is perfect. You know, we've been fans for a long time. This is awesome. He signed this hat back at Bristol a couple years ago, or last year.
Oh, Atlanta.
Atlanta. Oh, yeah, that's right. It is Atlanta. Yep. And then suddenly some people are downers. It's like, dude, where were you 3 years ago? You can just go away. So I know you've been tweeting a lot about it. Figured we'd give you a little soapbox here to express the opinions that...
Yeah, we call this segment Let's Talk Society.
Let's Talk Society.
Hashtag Let's Talk Society, right? You know, I will tell you what. This is one of the beauties of social media because Bubba is one of the guys that really early on found the Orange Cone account, followed along, interacted with me. I got to know him pretty well. Just randomly, several years ago, I happened to park next to him at Michigan in the infield there, and we walked into the garage area together. He is one of the just a genuinely nice guy. I really like Bubba. And on top of that, he's a racer, man. He has paid his dues. He has gone from Legends cars to late models to K&N to trucks to Xfinity to Cup. That is exactly the way we want our guys to come up through it. He hasn't bought any of his rides. He has no money behind him. This is exactly the story that we want. And here we have a bunch of uninformed backwoods hill jacks just absolutely trashing him on social media. And it really pisses me off. And you know, I understand that the politics of this country right now are, it's very divisive, and I get it. But one of the things that we should never, ever be divisive about is inclusion and opportunity and doing things based on a meritocracy, right? This is NASCAR is supposed to be a meritocracy. You want the best of the best. And I get that that's not how it is. This has never been, quote, the best 40 drivers in the world. It's not the best 40 drivers in the world. It's the best 40 drivers who have been able to either raise the sponsorship or get hired to come and do this. And right now, Bubba's one of those guys, and he has done it. He has earned his shot. He has done, he's won races at every level except that Xfinity deal, and I get that, okay? But people who want to say, well, he was in a Roush car and he still couldn't win. It's not that he couldn't win. It's just that he didn't win. But who won all the races that he was in? Yeah, Kyle Busch won them, and Brad Keselowski won them, and Joey Logano won them, and Denny Hamlin won them. And, you know, Bubba's, he doesn't have a lot of experience racing up against those guys. You can't hold it against him that he didn't go out and beat those guys in equipment that maybe wasn't quite, I mean, it was equal equipment, but, I mean, let's be real here. The Penske cars and the Joe Gibbs cars, they're still the head and shoulders above everybody else in that deal. So how did Bubba do compared to everybody else? Well, he was always, you know, right up there at the front of the Xfinity only drivers each and every week. He knocked off a bunch of top tens this year before his ride went away. So you can't sit there and tell me that he hasn't earned his shot. He has earned his shot. And the great thing about it is he is one of the coolest dudes you're ever going to meet. There's a reason why Ryan Blaney and he are best friends. Everybody loves Ryan Blaney, right? Yep. Well, Ryan Blaney loves Bubba Wallace.
Yep.
To me, that's all you need to know.
100% drink. Everybody have a drink.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great point, Cone, in regards to Daryl Bubba's accomplishments. You know, he didn't quite get there in a Roush Fenway car, but the only two wins they have since Chris Buescher are Ryan Reed winning plate races. So what are we measuring against?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like the Roush cars. They're not bad cars. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they've got good stuff. But, you know, the funding wasn't there, you know. And again, who was winning all those races? You know, the JGR cars were winning all those races. The Penske cars were winning all those races. And, you know, it's you have to compare him against people of similar experience and similar equipment. And he held his, not only did he hold his own, he outperformed most of those guys. And then when he did get in the 43 car this summer, I mean, did he set the world on fire? No. I mean, that debut race at Pocono, I mean, you could tell he was absolutely frustrated with himself. He was so down on himself. But within a couple of weeks, he finished 11th in a car that had been, you know, an average of a 15th to 20th place car throughout most of the season. So he overperformed within 2 weeks. What more do you want? You know, you can't sit there and tell me that he doesn't deserve the shot. He deserves a shot. Let's see how he does. You know, maybe he doesn't get that win. Maybe he runs 28th in the points for a couple of years and he fades away. But you know what? You can't begrudge him the opportunity to do it. He has earned the shot to do it, and he's got my full support. He's a great guy, and I would hope that all the fans out there just give him, like anybody else. I mean, you don't have to cheer for him. You don't have to stand up and cheer for him each and every week. But just give him the chance. You know, that's all I'm asking.
I just can't wait. I guess I envision in my mind this place where he wins a cup race.
Oh, it would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Oh, the couch is getting flipped.
Everybody goes absolutely bananas.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with what Daryl looks like.
Yeah.
It has everything to do with what a great story he is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know what? I'm going to say the same thing about a Daniel Suarez. I'm going to say the same thing about Danica Patrick. And, you know, here's the funny thing is I know that I make a lot of Danica jokes on Twitter. And folks don't understand. You know, they think, well, he's making a joke. He must not like her. That's nothing could be further from the truth. I think Danica is great for the sport. I think she's a pretty darn good race car driver. You know, is she going to be someone that's going to go out and win 10 races a year and fight for a championship? Probably not. You know, could she go out and win a race? yeah, she could go out and win at a Daytona or a Talladega or a Kansas, maybe even a Martinsville. You know, she's got the ability to go and do this. You know, things are going to, just like anybody else, things are going to have to go her way that day. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, but to say she can't do it, that's false. I mean, where did she finish the year that she started from the pole at Daytona? Where did she end up finishing that day?
I want to say, you know, she finished eighth or ninth.
Well, up in the top, up in the top 10 up until the final couple of laps and shuffled out and still finished up in the top 10. She had a great race that day. Can you imagine if Danica, a woman, were able to pick up a win in the top level of NASCAR? That would be awesome. You know, and Daniel Suarez, he's the Xfinity Series champion from last year. He's had a couple of really good races this year. He's a great guy. I mean, and I know that you guys have some of these questions that we were going to go through later on in the show, but someone made mention to me privately in response to one of those questions. You know, what does NASCAR need more of? Do they need more drivers or do they need more good PR stories? And the great thing about some of these folks is they're both. That's what we really need, is a great driver who is also a great PR story. Darrell Wallace, Daniel Suarez, Danica Patrick, all three of them fit the bill to me.
Got some goosebumps right there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And thinking about Suarez, you know, and maybe this is bad of me. I forget the diversity part sometimes. When you're a fan for a long time or whatever, you see through the. It's not that you see through those things. It's just that that's not a thing anymore. And so maybe I need to go back and reflect too on my, you know, on my own side and just sort of think, wow, this is amazing what these guys are doing and the diversity that they're bringing into the sport and the fans that they're bringing and how good this is for NASCAR. So, you know, when you say, "Oh, I'm colorblind, I don't even see it." Well, maybe you should see it a little bit and appreciate
it. Let's think about this in a historical perspective. Why was it a big deal that Jackie Robinson was the first black player in Major League Baseball? Because he was the first. Why is it not a big deal that there are how many hundreds of black players in baseball now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there are so many hundreds of black players in baseball. So right now, we have exactly one driver of African-American descent in NASCAR. That's why it's a big deal. When there are 20% of the field made up of black race car drivers, maybe it's not such a big deal then, because that's more representative of society as a whole. Now,
sure.
I understand that racing is different than stick and ball sports, because if you want to go and play basketball, like a lot of inner city youth like to go and do, it's really easy to go and do. All you have to do is go and buy a basketball,
yep,
get a pair of ratty shoes, and you go down to the local park and you shoot hoops. And if you're really good, maybe you get to go play on the, you know, a travel basketball team or a high school basketball team, and you get a scholarship to go play at college. And, you know, yeah, there is an actual path there for someone to go and do that. You can't really do that in racing, because it's not available at your local high school. It actually costs a ton of money to come and do this.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a barrier. That's a huge barrier of entry for anybody to come and do it. I mean, I certainly couldn't have done it when I was a kid. And that's why you don't see a lot of, I'm going to use the term urban, but that's why you don't see a lot of African-Americans doing this, and a lot of inner city youth, whether they be black, Hispanic, low-income white folks. That's why you don't see that, because it costs a ton of money to do that. But that's why you do see those stories in other sports, because those barriers to entry just aren't there.
Well, I'll close out that segment with this one, which is when I got to meet him and he signed the hat and everything. I said, "Man, can I get a selfie with you?" He said, "Yeah, bud, sure thing. Go right ahead." Because my last name's Wallace as well. And I said, "Hey, man, us Wallaces, we're, you know, stick together and all that." And so I reach out and hold my phone up, and he makes this, he like puts two thumbs up and opens his mouth and just yells. He's just like, "Ah," and takes a selfie. And it's like, man, that's just cool. That's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I like to do when I take my kids to the races, I like to, however many of my children come to the races with me, I like to get their picture taken with the winner. And Bubba was the first one that we did that with when he won at Eldora in, 2014? Mm-hmm. Just a super nice guy. Super nice guy. I wish him nothing but the best. And I know for a fact that there are thousands of stories just like we just told. You know, he's a great guy. He really is. He likes to spend time with the people that pull for him. He really does.
Well, and I'd like to say, just ad lib, for all of the people out there that have said some really derogatory things about Bubba Wallace that are probably white rednecks living under rocks. Bubba's a bigger redneck than you, and he can race cars.
And he can race a car. That's for sure.
I love that. We're going to move on to some listener questions here. We got several of them came in. You know, I'll start with the one that's on the bottom of this list here, just because we were just talking about it. Richard C. at RC Coke 47. Cone, how long before NASCAR realizes what a public relations asset they had with Danica Patrick driving?
2011? I think they've known that one all along. Yeah. Trust me. Yeah, that's no secret. They have hitched their star to their wagon to her star a long time ago. I don't know how much longer that one is going to be possible. There aren't really a lot of top level cup rides available right now. I know the two front row cars are somewhat in play. The 34 certainly has been announced that it's open. The 38 is kind of a question mark. I don't know that Danica is going to want to step into that without some sort of huge commitment from Bob Jenkins that they're going to really step up the financing of that team and do what it takes to put them on par with maybe a Furniture Row or something like that. They need an alliance in place. But I will tell you what, I mean, those guys have certainly done so much with so little over there. I mean, they've won a couple of races with David Reagan and Chris Buescher over the course of the past couple of years. So it's not like it wouldn't be a terrible choice to go and do. I just don't think Danica's, that's not where I see her ending up. But boy, I would love to see her find something top level, maybe a top level Xfinity ride, you know, maybe do what Sam Hornish did. You know, Sam, bit the bullet and went down there and contended for a championship. Can you imagine Danica down there fighting for an Xfinity Series championship? I think that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, they certainly do know that she has got a lot of value for them promotionally. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, awesome as a bunch of cuss words we normally don't say on the show. That's what I want. I really want Danica in this sport, one way or another, whatever makes sense. I don't really want to see her be a back marker in Cup. I'd love to see her get in an Xfinity ride that has a chance to make some noise and use her star power to get more little girls interested in NASCAR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My daughter certainly wants to know how she's doing every time we've got the race on. How's Danica doing? Awesome. It's her two questions. You know, who's leading? Where's Danica? You know,
that's so cool.
When she first broke into the sport, that was questions I was asking when I turned on those Xfinity races when she ran for JRM. Yep. Who's leading? Where's Danica?
So we have a good segue there. Mark Wiley at underscore NASCAR nerd. I like this question.
Nerd.
What's the performance ceiling for a team like RPM or Front Row in today's NASCAR without a major alliance like Furniture Row and Gibbs or Wood Brothers and Penske? My first thought is, well, RPM's got Bubba.
They do. They have Bubba, and I think that's going to allow them to maybe go out and find an alliance like that.
Yeah.
They certainly do need you can't, in this era, you can't do it alone. You do need to have some engineering and some technical support from maybe a Stuart Haas. Mm-hmm. You know, remember, just a couple of years ago, Stuart Haas was the one with the technical alliance. You know, maybe they're to the point now where they are the flagship and, Front Row or RPM aligns with them. You know, I've also heard some rumors that RPM may be aligning with another manufacturer at another team. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But, you know, they certainly do need to have some sort of technical alliance that gives them the access to the resources of a multiple car team. Remember, RPM is just a one car team right now. So, you know, if they could find a competitive alliance, I think that it could certainly raise that ceiling a little bit. You know, right now, I think that they're, you know, even with Bubba behind the wheel, they're probably a 10th to 15th place car on a routine good day basis.
Yep.
You know, that's not to say that they couldn't go to a Daytona or a Talladega or a road course or, you know, where whatever Bubba tends to run well and overperform and maybe race up into the top five and maybe contend for a couple of wins. But I think on a routine basis that a good day for them would be, you know, 8th to 12th. in a normal day would probably be, you know, 11th to 15th. Sure. But if they did find that alliance, there's nothing to say that they couldn't morph into what a Furniture Row has done or the Wood Brothers have done over the course of the past couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, exactly what you just said is what happened with Front Row. You know, with David Reagan, he's got the win at Dega with Front Row. I think his other win, it wasn't with them, but it was
was that Daytona in the six?
Daytona,
the
yeah. Car. Yeah, exactly. So I think you're exactly right in that the ceiling is, you know, maybe 10th to 15th place car, and you get the occasional, you know, roll the dice at one of the gambling tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but then, yeah, if you can find that alliance, which I think exactly what you said, getting a driver like Bubba Wallace gets you closer to getting that alliance, then, I mean, there is no ceiling.
It's going to get you media attention for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And that matters. So,
and in this day and age, that's what it's all about, because media attention translates into impressions, and impressions translates into revenue. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, whether we like it or not, these teams cost a lot of money to operate. And, you know, I can remember several years ago, ThorSport hired Kerry Earnhardt because they were thinking, well, you know, if we have an Earnhardt, that's going to give us a chance to maybe raise more sponsorship money. It didn't quite materialize, but, you know, that's the thinking. That's why drivers like that get those opportunities, because, you know, hey, it's something that separates him from every other driver out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Bubba's not the kind of guy that wants to go out there and say, hey, look at me, I'm the only African-American driver here, you guys should throw money at me. But, you know, that does open some doors. And let's be real, every other person on this planet would take that opportunity if it was given to them. If, you know, if you found a way to monetize this podcast based on your last name being Wallace, wouldn't you do it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I could quit my job and do this for fun.
Yeah. I have never criticized anyone for capitalizing on some skill, whether it be earned or innate, to earn themselves money. We see it on Instagram all the time. I mean, I couldn't possibly agree with what you just said more in terms of, and the thing about Bubba Darrell Wallace Jr. is he's not saying, look at me, I'm the black driver. He's saying, would you please stop talking crap because I'm black?
Yeah.
Because I'm a race car driver and I'm here.
Just don't say mean things about me, people.
Yeah. Right.
Is that too much to ask? Come on.
It's not too much. Let's go to this one. I like this question, too. Andrew Kantzian at KHANTZIN.
I've got it stuck in your head.
It's Kantzian.
Yep,
you got me. So after listening to Matt Kenseth's interview with Nate Ryan, which I didn't do, but for the question part, he says, do you think he's bitter about his departure from JGR? And I had that feeling from, like, day one of that announcement.
Yeah. For sure.
I don't know that he's bitter about his departure. I think he's... Okay, so let's take this in stride because this is not a surprise for anybody who has been paying attention. When Eric Jones got signed to drive a 1-year deal in the 77 car for Furniture Row, everybody knew what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody knew that he was going to go to the 20 and Matt Kenseth was going to be the odd man out. That's just how it was. I think the frustrating part for Matt Kenseth is that another similar opportunity hasn't presented itself. The 77 went away. I was shocked that that car not only went away, but that Kenseth wasn't driving that car. I thought that was going to be a swap trade.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be a trade personally. I mean, and I had no inside information on that. That was my gut telling me that that's what was going to happen. You know, I think what we have seen out of Matt Kenseth over the course of the past 4 to 5 years is that his GAF factor, if you guys follow me on that one.
Yep, gotcha. Loud and clear.
The GAF factor on that has dropped precipitously over, you know, because when, you know, we remember the Matt is a Robot commercials back in 2004 when he was the champion and Nextel was kind of promoting him as this robot. He's not that robot anymore. You know, he has opinions. and he's not afraid to mix it up with people, as Brad Keselowski can attest. So I'm not really all that surprised that he has expressed his displeasure that he doesn't have an opportunity for next year. But I don't know that he's bitter about it, but I think he certainly is a little frustrated with it.
That's a good way to put it. Yep, yep. So bitter, maybe at first bitter, but then looking at opportunities, and I would agree that at this point frustrated, like, hey, I'm a championship driver. Not just I have a championship, but within the last 2 years I have been a championship driver. You know, yeah. There should be something out there for him, and it would be weird to not have him in there. Of course, I mean, we've had a whole year without Biffle. Like, that's...
But I will tell you, I mean, and we've had this discussion for the past month or so online following this announcement. You know, the race teams are going through what the stock market calls a course correction. You know, the stock market, there's a bubble, and it drops a little bit and just kind of evens out to where it should be. That's kind of what we're doing right here. Budgets are going to have to be slashed because sponsorship money just isn't what it once used to be. And one of the easiest things to take off of that bottom line is driver salary. And someone like Matt Kenseth has been accustomed to racing for X amount of dollars. Well, when you offer half of X, it's really hard for someone like Kenseth or Biffle, or I'm just going to say Carl Edwards, even though that's not why he left. It's tough for any of these drivers to go, yeah, I'm not going to take a huge pay cut to keep doing this. You're going to have to pay me. Well, some race teams just aren't going to do that. Why would you continue to pay Matt Kenseth? I'm just going to throw this number out here. I've got no idea what a race driver makes, and it's none of my business. But I'm going to say $8 million a year as a base salary. Okay, why would you continue to pay Matt Kenseth $8 million a year to do it when Eric Jones will do it for $1 million a year?
That's a good point. Now, that said, look at Casey Kane. Now, I understand he's still being paid by Hendrick and all that to fill out his contract. But, hey, I want to race.
Yeah. You know, that's the choice that you have to make. And I guarantee you that he's not going to be making what he once was if he continues to stay in the 95 car once his Hendrick deal expires.
Right.
You know, when the 95 team actually has to pay him, does he decide to stay there? Maybe he does. You know, maybe he'll say, you know what, I would rather make $1.5 million a year instead of zero a year. Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, that's the choice that all of these guys are going to have to make. I mean, there are certain drivers who are still going to be able to name their price. Jimmy Johnson is going to get paid what he wants to get paid until he's done. So is Kyle Busch. So is Brad Keselowski.
Yeah.
At least for the near term. You know, but here's the, are there guys like Denny Hamlin? You know, how long is Denny without a championship? How long is he going to be able to name his price? You know, how long is, let's pick another driver just at random here.
Joey. Well, he's young-ish.
How long is Clint Bowyer going to be able to name his price? You know, Clint hasn't won in a couple of years. He hasn't contended for a championship in a couple of years. How long is he going to be able to command that type of money?
I don't know that he was able to name his price going to SHR.
That's a good point.
All right. Okay. Okay. All right, guys. I get it.
I'm a Clint backer. Like, I'm not a, you know, I'm not
against him. I'm not against him. You know, I'm just throwing that out there, you know.
No, you make good points.
Yeah.
I think, from the perspective of being, you know, fans of the guy that's going to move to that 95, I think what he's hoping for is that they have enough success that there's somebody who decides to leave the sport who was in a great car, and you know, there's some transition path there, however many years it takes. I mean, I think that's the only reason why you'd really want to do it.
Well, sure. And if you're a Casey Kane fan, you're used to him moving cars. So this is like one of those, oh, well, okay.
All
well,
four
we're going to do that. Manufacturers
covered.
All right, well, let's see. And get a win in there. Just collect them all.
Is Evernham going to bring Dodge back with Casey as the veteran?
I'm in. last question from the PETM posse, Mick Rose at GoDucks42_Mick. Always sends us something. Appreciate it, Mick. Several drivers have expressed some interest in running the double, the Indy 500, Coke 600. Any chance it happens in 2018? And if so, who? I have not seen. You know, what it feels like this always comes down to is scheduling. And if the schedule allows for it, there will be somebody who does it because it's that cool. It gets that much attention, and they want to do it that bad. It's always perplexing to me why they wouldn't want to schedule it so that somebody could do it, because it just brings so much attention to both of those races that I think that attention doesn't happen otherwise. So it's confusing to me why they wouldn't, but it's all about schedule. If they overlap, it's never going to happen. If there's enough time down to like the 30-minute schedule to do it, they'll do it.
Yeah, to Rusty's point, I think we have to start in the 11 hour on the East Coast to do it.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, it does, and I think there's only one real strong candidate to do that, and right now we haven't heard anything to suggest that this is going to happen. But I think Kyle Larson will be the next guy to do it. I don't know that 2018 will be it, but I think at some point for sure he's going to run the Indy 500 and the Coke 600 on the same day. There's a couple other guys that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Kurt Busch give another whack at it.
Absolutely.
You know, I think Brad Keselowski is another guy that I think would be a strong candidate to do it, you know, especially with the Penske tie there. He's expressed a little interest in that as well. But to me, Kyle Larson is the one who actively really, really wants to do it.
Well, so Mick asked about the double. And one of the things I was surprised about, Casey Kane signing to run a full schedule with the 95 team and Levine Family Racing, is one of his dreams has always been to run the 500. Mm-hmm. He but had a deal to run it this year, and Hendrick said, I can't. I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. I don't know why you would say no to that, truthfully. You know, that's real perplexing to me, because all that does is give additional exposure to your partners and your sponsors. And, you know, I know that it takes him out of the loop a little bit, but let's be real here. Casey wasn't, you know, especially back in the early part of the season, you know, he wasn't setting the world on fire anyhow. So,
well,
you know, what would that have cost them at that point?
Well, let's not forget Casey's best track is Charlotte Motor Speedway. He's won four races there.
And his most recent win is at Indy.
And at Indy. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%, Cone. I think if there was any sort of traction to a deal for him to run the race, it was ridiculous for it to get squashed by his cup owner.
Yeah.
I think that him going to a team like Levine suggests that those talks are going to open.
And that'd be cool.
Casey has so many ties to Indianapolis because of moving from Seattle, or I guess what, Enumclaw, to Indianapolis to race state dirt cars with the hopes of running Indy, and then getting snatched away by NASCAR. The same thing that happened to Jeff Gordon and Tony.
And he drove for the same people that Jeff Gordon drove for, by the way. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would expect to see Casey Kane race in the Indy 500 within the next 5 years.
Cool. I would love to see it. Casey's a great guy. I'm a huge fan. I've always been a huge fan since he drove the performance racing industry 9 car for Steve Lewis back in the day. You know, Casey's just on the gas kind of guy. I know that he hasn't had the results in the cup deal that he's wanted. But I love the fact, one of the things that I think is really cool is that he still runs that sprint car team, that outlaw sprint car team.
I think that's the thing that makes him happy. I think that's what makes him happy.
And he comes and hangs out at the racetrack.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I really like. And, you know, I would love to see any of these guys have that opportunity if they wanted to come and run the Indy 500. If I'm a team owner, and I'll note that I'm not, but if I was, you know, I'm going to hire a race car driver. And race car drivers race. You want to go out and run the Indy 500? Have at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better have a race car driver, too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, let's gas it up with all
I'm
that.
I'm going to hire Mike Seneca. That's my
guy. We're
kind of speaking under breath there.
Yeah, I love it.
Hope
I love
y'all
it.
Caught it.
We're going to Phoenix, off to the land of rattlesnakes, terrible glares for the driver, elimination race for all three of the series. We got, the story's going in. Here we go. We got Truex, Kyle, and Harvick are clinched in. Brad, we talked about it before, possibly in by points, and Denny Blaney, Chase, and Jimmy are in sort of must-win situations. So, with this being kind of Harvick's playground, is the note that I put here. What are you looking forward to, Cone?
All right, so we talked about it earlier. This is Harvick's playground. And if he goes out there and wins this race, that effectively eliminates one of those drivers that needs to race their way in by winning. So that would keep a Denny Hamlin out.
100%.
That would keep a Ryan Blaney out. So that's what we're going to see. It's not like, I mean, winning is its own reward, right? So you want to go out and win the race because you want to win the race. But Harvick also wants to win the race to keep someone else out of Homestead.
And,
you're going to see him really out there hustling. You're also going to see, I hope, based on the format, and this is what NASCAR wants, they want those Game 7 moments, I hope you see somebody take somebody out to the checkered and steal that. I mean, like we did with Ryan Newman and Kyle Larson a couple of years ago. I want to see something like that. I want to see somebody just flat out take someone out. I want to see some tempers. I want to see some...
Well, what if Denny is number one and Chase is number two and Chase is a little faster and he kind of owes him one for a couple of races ago? I mean, that would be the ideal for me, honestly, to see that payback happen here going into the championship race.
Boys have at it, right?
Right. That's the way it is. And if Harvick wins or Kyle or Truex, I mean, that almost guarantees Brad in. Like, if you're leading that race as Harvick, now you know that Brad's going to be in, unless Brad, you know, obviously does something, but he's 22 points ahead, so he can point his way in if any of those guys win, or if Brad wins, obviously. I don't think they would ever go to that. Like, Harvick would never be like, oh, well, I don't want Brad to be in this thing, so I'm going to give the lead up to Blaney or Chase or something. You know, that's never going to go through the heads. But it's an interesting dynamic that is a result of this playoff system.
Yeah, I think you only. Boy,
wouldn't that be interesting though?
Wouldn't it?
If someone was like, you know what? Because you see him do it on pit road, right?
I don't need to be second off of pit road.
I need to be third off of pit road. Wouldn't it be interesting if someone like Harvick said, you know what, I could win this race and Brad could point his way in, but if I finish second and let Blaney in, I've got a much better chance of beating Blaney at Homestead than I do Brad. Boy, wouldn't that be interesting? I would love to see something like that play out.
That would be nuts.
Can you imagine? He didn't give it 100%.
Yeah, the 100% rule comes in.
The social media outrage after that?
Everybody. Well, I don't. I guess
I can't see that ever happening.
I hate the word "believe."
I don't
see
it happening, but I would love it if it did.
Yeah.
I don't like the word "believe," so I'm not going to use it. But I don't believe that these teams are capable of thinking second, third, and fourth generation remove strategy. I think first generation strategy is the only real thing you can operate against.
Well, it's if I win, I've got momentum too, and I've got backing, and people are talking about it,
and money,
and all that stuff. So, win is number one. If I can't win, then let's strategize. But I think the situation that we're talking about is if I am winning, do I give up that for something else? No, that'll.
Well, second generation strategy would be Harvick wrecking the field at Talladega, he did successfully.
That would never happen. That would never happen.
Yeah. So, I mean,
that race is not
happened twice. Wait, it did happen. Never
mind. Yeah, it did happen. It's why that race is not the elimination race anymore.
It did happen twice. Hey, maybe they'll come up with like a line that they'll paint a line on the racetrack and say, well, if you crash before you get to this line, then it doesn't count.
Yeah, right.
It's genius. They should do that.
Paint another line out there. We don't have enough lines out there.
You shut your mouth, Cone. paint 64 more lines.
Yeah. We got restart zones and white flag lines and whatever else. Start-finish line.
Yeah, we thought cones were so useful, we just painted a square orange and took you out of play.
I think this is why they did that, because they're tired of hearing my opinion.
So
I was in the tower at Eldora, and I walked over to say hi to the NASCAR officials like I always do, and they're like, yeah, you aren't going to be very happy with us. I'm like, why? Did you finally get rid of that stupid cone?
Yeah, but the choose cone might come back next year.
Hey, all right.
I said, so you know, you're not going to shut me up.
This isn't the thing that's going to do it. With that, let's do some picks. It's time for picks.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, let's have at it.
I'm told I can't pick my nose. It's a deal breaker.
Oh, okay. Well, instead of picking the nose,
it's we'll always a miracle if I make it through a show on camera without picking mine.
And you can't pick your friend's nose. There you go.
You know, I don't know if any of y'all had this, but my dad would always say, "Son, you going to the movies?" I say, "No, why?" He goes, "Because you're picking your seat." Right when I got my hand up my butt,
get your knuckles in there,
trying to get with the wedgie or whatever. I had never heard that from anybody else but my dad. You going to the movies, son? And after the third or fourth time, you're like, "Ah, crap! Yep, I've got my hand up my pants again."
So my old ring itches. Leave me alone.
So let's blow
my own thing, pops. Leave me alone.
Let's pick drivers to win at Phoenix. So Cone, we'll give you a number one here and go for it. Tell us who your pick is for Phoenix.
All right. I mean, I know it's hard to go against Kevin Harvick, but I am going to go with the belief that in a must-win situation, and I don't know that it's a must-win, but it's a we-would-really-like-to-win situation. Brad Keselowski is going to pull it off this week, and that's my pick.
Brad K.
Brad K. I love it.
Good pick.
Yep. Sherwin?
Well, in the interest of picking the must-win, and picking the team I think is most capable of a must-win regardless of racetrack, Lowe's, number 48.
I love that pick. I love it. Because of that, I strongly want to pick Chase for a similar reason, though they haven't, you know, shown that close it out ability, that closer Harvick sort of thing yet. But I love this pick for a lot of reasons, and I'm going with heart, style, everything else, and I'm sticking with Hendrick with Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Hell yeah!
Taking the
Dale checkered. Yeah, excuse me, Dale yeah.
Dale yeah, taking the checkered at Phoenix for a nice send-off. Because, I mean,
he's won there before in the 2003, I think.
He's won there, he won 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago. Yep. So...
Dale Earnhardt Jr. won a race a year and a half ago?
Right?
I thought he always crashed in the first commercial break.
You're playing to that crowd. I don't think we have many of that crowd listening to us, to be honest with you.
maybe not. But
oh, my God. The first time I ever did that was so hilarious. I must have had 50 responses, like, in a heartbeat. Those, oh my God, Dale crashed. And then, you know, they come back from commercial, and it was like, you can go after yourself. You are so you are terrible. You are the worst person ever. We hope you die.
I love it. So what I think is, and this is all for drama, obviously, but, I mean, Homestead is all about the champion. This one is, what a great send-off that would be. It would be really cool. And it's not that he's incapable of winning it at Phoenix either. So
Rattlesnake Dale.
I'm excited. And so it's what I'm going to be rooting for, too. So, hell, I gotta pick it. So, anyway.
Hashtag Rattlesnake Dale.
Wreck the chase guy to win the race.
Like
he wrecked somebody who could lock themselves in. At Homestead, and he dumped him.
Oh, Dale, yeah.
Are you saying dumped him or moved him?
Because no, just flat out takes him out.
I don't know that I would.
I would not be upset. Actually,
it's Dale Jr. though.
It's Dale Jr. I would not be upset if it's
I'm an unapologetic Dale Jr. fan. I just don't own the 88 stuff.
So let's just play this scenario out.
Okay,
all right.
He takes out Denny Hamlin. Like,
fine, do it.
Yeah, do it. Lap
fine.
One.
Fine.
He just flat out takes out Denny Hamlin, and they come up to him afterwards and like, yeah, we thought that rivalry was going to be between Denny and Chase. What happened down there? Why did you get into him? And he just goes, yeah, I just got tired of hearing about him.
I'd like him to say, well, Denny's a butthole, and we wanted to win a race.
your scenario is like a mic drop, really. I mean,
I'm just tired of hearing about
Dale
him.
Dale can do whatever he wants in this race. And he should win.
I don't want his last win for him. You know, would be for him to be doing something above or beyond. What's the word? Underboard.
Below.
Like board. I don't want him. I don't want him to have to answer for how he won his last race. So
I hope he doesn't just dump somebody.
But if he moved Denny Hamlin,
if he intentionally took out Denny Hamlin at Phoenix, he wouldn't have to answer for that.
No, you're right. You're 100%.
Yep.
100%. Like, hands up, 100%.
If he took out Chase Elliott, he would have to answer for it, because they were like, hey, he's the people's champion. What did you do that for?
Yeah.
If he took out Denny Hamlin, they would be like, oh, yeah, he had it coming.
Good Mick Rose sure. just posted, 88 takes out 24. Crowd would be confused on what to do. Yeah.
Yeah, hell, awesome. I would.
I would cuss like, and minute, scream.
Do we,
and
do we... Do we boo him? What?
Yeah, what do we do?
Do we boo Dale Jr.? What?
I love it. Great observation. That's funny.
What day is this?
Well, now that we're completely off the rails, let's do it. We got Strange with Stang. Ashley J. Stang sends us a question. And y'all...
Jesus, I forgot that this was part of the show.
Put the kids to bed. Stop the podcast if you're
offended. I think Rosie's actually going to cuss for the first time.
Because I don't cuss on this podcast much, but she sent us a question. Sherwin said, well, we might have to do some editing of that.
And she called me words on the phone.
And she called you words on the phone with the text and stuff. So I
would tell her.
So Sherwin is going to stay true to his word that he's not going to do it. But, all right, here we go. Ashley J. Stang, she says, would a shit sandwich be made with regular sliced bread or a hot dog bun? Also, tell Orange Cone that I said you can eat a shit sandwich. So, Cone, you can eat a shit sandwich, and also, would it be made with regular bread or a hot dog bun?
Wow. Okay. So,
there's only one right answer.
Right?
Yeah, hot dog is not a sandwich, for one.
So yes! All right!
And I know that she is the hot dog queen of Chicago. So, yeah. Abe. Hey, Abe. How's it going, Abe? Yeah, no. Okay.
We got him tongue-tied.
Stumped the cone.
Great. Stumped the cone. Oh, okay. I can't even get into it. Yeah,
I love it.
Aggravated right now. So.
Describe a good sandwich.
I think NASCAR Wonka told her to go make him a sandwich today, as a matter of fact.
Oh my goodness. Oh, man.
Get in the kitchen!
Oh, man. Yeah. Well.
I would use whole wheat. so here's what people may not know this. From time to time, Ashley and I converse. And I told her. I said, hey, you know what would be really funny if you looked up and
converse is the wrong word. I'm pretty sure.
I'm cussing each other on Twitter. I think it's
the very dark corner of the internet where these two women simulate eating chocolate ice cream.
Yes.
And, yeah. I told her to check it out.
Oh, Lord.
And I think that's where this comes from.
Oh, I love it.
Okay, love it. So, I'm not speechless. Yeah.
He just had to contemplate his words carefully.
I know that I'm not on lap traffic and I can't cuss because I really would like to right now.
Well, maybe once we figure that out.
Yeah, right. Oh, my goodness. All right, well,
have you guys ever had like a huge miscommunication like that ended humorously?
Yes.
Yeah. A couple years ago, I was.
Other staying, day. In the South, was, we just call that the other day.
Was, oh, yeah. That's the other day.
Yeah. It was a couple years ago. I was going to go stay with my uncle for a couple of weeks. Oof. And I got there, and I'm in this, like, I'm like, who are all these other people? There's like random people living in a couple of the bedrooms, and people down in the basement playing loud music the whole freaking night. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And when I got there, he's like, well, here's a list of rules for the house. You know, he gave me like the list, you can't smoke in here. I'm like, I don't smoke, so it's no big deal. He's like, you can't mess with the thermostat. I'm like, I don't care. You can't have the TV up, you know, loud past 11 o'clock at night. You can't have any substances of any type. You can't drink. You can't do drugs. I'm like, well, I don't do any of that anyhow, so it's all good. And after a couple of days, I realized actually living in a sober house. I'm like, yeah, I don't have a, what the hell? I'm in a sober house? What the hell is going on here? I have no idea how this happened. Anything like that ever happened to you guys where you just had like this huge miscommunication and was really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I see where you're going with all that. Yes, yes, most certainly not the context of I've been in a house where I can't drink because I would just leave.
Yeah,
but
you wouldn't do that.
But
yeah, you'd be like, yeah, you can have your
stuff. Right. I see where you're going. So, yep.
Yeah.
Well, what is it? You got to tell me. Well, you can't just go, oh yeah.
Oh, okay. You actually recall? Because
I know I have a story like that, but I don't think I can recall it. Like just maybe in the file and pull the story out.
That'll be homework for next episode. The most, the biggest like miscommunication where now you're in this situation. You're like, well, hell, how do I get into this? This sucks. So I will contemplate that.
Really good. I've got a really good how the hell did I get into this? This sucks story. Yeah.
All right. Get into this hashtag. This sucks.
Yeah.
Awesome. You want to lay it on us now, or are we going to save that one for the next one?
The awkward silence here is just beautiful. I love it.
Right?
It happens. It is part of it, really.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Like, oh, crap.
What we'll
hey,
say,
you guys, I think you guys take over from Lap Traffic as the best podcast.
Oh,
you're just blowing smoke up our asses.
I don't know if I want that distinction. I really like being the dregs.
Let's be the stepbrother.
I like being the shit sandwich.
The shit sandwich.
You guys even said it. They're now the shittiest racing podcast.
All right. You know, we need to make up a trophy that we pass back and forth whenever you decide. You know,
we'll
this
FedEx it back and forth.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, actually, we won't use FedEx. We use DHL.
You know what? And it needs to weigh about 25 pounds, so it costs a lot of money every
right,
time
like
we send it
bucks
back.
Every time you have to send it
back and forth. Just ship a cone back and forth. I'm really selfish, and really the best podcast is the one that has me on it.
Oh, there's the ego.
Oh, that's I love it. Good. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Hey, three-way. Yeah.
Three-way.
That's what we call branding, by the way.
It's sending you middle fingers on the YouTube. I love it. So with that, hey, Cone, why don't you close us out here? Let everybody know, I mean, as if they need to know where to find you, but anything going on, where you're going to be next and all that sort of stuff, we'll close this thing out.
At NASCAR Chasm. I mean, no. At the Orange Cone on Twitter, yeah. Yeah, don't accept any substitutes. There's only one at the Orange Cone. That's the one. Yeah,
that's the one. No, no substitutes. No, whatever they're called,
no
imposters.
Cone. No zero cone. The zero cone's a loser.
Oh man, yeah. Screw that guy. All right. With that,
hey, I was just reliving the time when my children told Darth Hendrick to go F himself at Daytona this year. That was awesome.
Oh, I love it.
That's hilarious.
All right, with that, y'all, we're going to close it out.
Imitation
y'all
know is the sincerest form of flattery.
That's it.
That's right.
Y'all know where to find us. Y'all go on ptmpodcast.com, at ptmpodcast, ptmpodcast on Twitter, Instagram, everything else. You just search
Pretty
PTM
much.
Podcast. You're just going to find us. You know what it is. As always, I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace.
And I'm Andrew Sherwin at Pregame Engineer.
And we're going to we've had a blast. This has been awesome. So y'all know where to find us, and y'all know where we're going to be. We're going to be right here next week doing it again. So join us in. We'll figure out what's going on going into Homestead. And then, Sherwin, we got to go into the offseason. It's not that I love
interesting things that are going to happen.
It's not that I love offseason because we don't get to watch races, but we always have so much fun. Just
we're going to give it hell.
We'll be
harder on the gas in the offseason than we were in the in-season because we don't have to talk real live NASCAR.
Oh yeah, so y'all just tune in. It's going to be completely nuts and all that stuff. Can't wait to talk to y'all. Thank you very much.
We're
going to
chug beer on the after hours on YouTube here.
We'll talk to y'all next week.